Wide Web at newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duvernay, your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
Well, you know, I've been learning French. I've been watching two shows on Netflix. Well, one is actually on Acorn, Balazar, which is a French detective series, and Call My Agent on Netflix. They're both in French with subtitles. And I have this sense that if I watch enough of these subtitled Netflix shows, I will learn French. What do you think?
Well, when I was in Belgium and couldn't speak any French, but I was there to learn French, it actually does help. However, I watched it without subtitles, naturally, and eventually it does sink in.
Oh, so you think it?
It's now been 30 years, so I'm not going to speak French to you, but at the time, it did get me to a point of fluency.
Yeah, I'm having trouble reading the English subtitles, though. It goes so fast.
Well, on that note, Neil, let's introduce our guest. We're thrilled to have with us my business partner and the managing partner of Arlington Financial Advisors, Joe Weiland. Joe, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So I have two articles that kind of go together. They were both in today's newspapers. The first one was in the New York Times, and the second one, with the same subject, was in the Wall Street Journal. And the title of the New York Times article is Virus in Check, China Economy Bounces Back. The Chinese economy surged 4.9% in the July to September quarter compared with the same month last year. China is the first to report growth in significant and significantly surpasses where it was last year at this time. And the key here is that it has almost no local transmission of the virus, while the United States and Europe face another accelerating wave of cases. So the first reason this article, I think, is important is that the whole notion that lockdowns don't work and it interferes with economic growth kind of is belied by the reality that the Chinese, now I understand it's a totalitarian regime and every country can't do what they did, but just from a scientific standpoint, by closing itself down, it looks like it worked in terms of getting rid of COVID.
I think another point to China is they also do rampant testing. So when they test, they're not just testing the people that want to be tested. Everyone gets tested and it gives you a good cross section of where the virus is and how to get rid of it.
Right. And the article said that not only do they do testing, but they had a very robust cell phone tracking system and had individual lockdowns in neighborhoods depending upon where they found cases. So China, and by the other interesting thing about this article is that China's exports have grown much more rapidly than its imports. And, you know, one of the sort of interesting elements here is that with the tariff war going on, it seems that China has been able to deal with it in a way that we seem to be struggling. So China, for better or for worse, is doing better than almost anyone else. And the second article, and the one element of the second article, which is the same subject about their growth, is from the Wall Street Journal. And it says, before you get too excited about China bailing out the world like they did in 2008, the article says, economists warn that expecting China to continue spending producing and exporting at these levels is wishful thinking, especially as the government clamps down on debt and global uncertainties pile up. So the this article is, says the same thing as the New York Times, but says don't count on China to bail the world out.
No, but I think what you can count on China for is some global growth. They have a large 350 million emerging middle class people. I think we are going to continue to see growth out of China. You know, when the Chinese government, as a Chinese middle class citizen, you start having a pet versus farm animals, it means that you have disposable income. And with disposable income, you can count on a consumer-based economy, which is much like our economy, and it grows. And that's where I think the real value of the Chinese market comes in terms of investing.
There's no question that if you're having seen near 5% growth, it's not going to stay contained within your borders. It's going to spill out. It's going to cause growth throughout the world in some way, shape, or form. So they may be consciously trying to hold it within and trying to be a little bit more, have a little more austerity, but I think it's ultimately going to help the whole world is with China growing, at least from an economic standpoint.
Yeah, sort of the irony is that we're counting on China to help us out. Sort of the great paradox of what's happened with all the rhetoric from our administration. The next article is from the Wall Street Journal this weekend, and it's entitled Tax Increase for Corporations Looks More Likely as Elections Near. And Biden has said that he intends to raise corporate taxes from the current 21% up to close to 30%. And there are dueling arguments among economists of the effect this will have. But I thought one of the more interesting arguments that's in the article is that the money that Biden hopes to raise by raising taxes is going to be used for healthcare, childcare, infrastructure, and education, which will be boosting worker productivity and economic growth in the long run. So that corporate profit impact may be felt. It may not really affect GDP, certainly not in the intermediate to long term, as money is redirected from the capital class to the general population. The next article is one that—
I think that's the case.
Yes, go ahead, John.
I was gonna say, I think that's the case anytime. You know, it's one of the misconceptions about taxes is that it goes into a black hole. You know, one of the things we do know about our government is it spends more than it makes. So anytime it taxes any component of the economy, it reprocesses that money directly back into the economy. And with a little kicker called a little debt that it also kicks in there. So it is interesting that that they see it as being potentially not a negative on the GDP longer term.
Well, you know, supply sideists have used the argument that, you know, lowering taxes causes spending to increase and therefore everyone benefits. But the reality is so many companies just built up their cash reserves or bought back their own stock. This may be a more robust way to stimulate the economy because it's going to result, if Biden's elected, in more fiscal stimulus, which is apparently what even the Fed is saying now that is needed. The next article is from the Wall Street Journal, stocks and bonds imply cash isn't trash. And we had an article like this last week, and this is a little clearer. It's basically saying that the best hedge against the declining stock market is cash, and certainly not 10-year treasury bills. And what it basically saying is that if you really want to hedge your bets on having a long position in the stock market, putting your money in short-term T-bills is a lot better than putting it into 10-year treasuries because the current 0.73% yield on 10-year is not that far from the 90-day or 180-day yield. And if we get a growing economy for some reason in the next couple of years, there's no place really for your short-term bonds to go down. But if you have 10-year bonds, they certainly could be hit more dramatically. So again, this article is saying probably the best place to put part of your money is in cash. And if you do put it in cash, short-term T-bills probably makes the most sense.
Yeah. If interest rates go up, cash is king.
Yeah.
I have to say, Neil, you picked out three interesting articles. I could talk about all three of those for for, you know, the whole show. They're pretty good.
Well, thank you. I think, yeah. So do we need Diane?
You just cut me right out of this show today, huh? I could have had the day off. I like it.
Well, I had one more article, but I think I'll hold it for next week, because what if this article is terrible and Joe takes that compliment
takes
away?
Back his compliment, yes.
Yeah, I think I'll be safe and say that you're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit the KellyMarshTeam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick and proud aunt. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing. But not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. One in six. That little girl sitting alone at the playground, she can't play like the other kids. She doesn't have the energy because she's hungry. School lunch will be her only meal today. It breaks my heart that this is the reality in our country. But it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. This food is then provided to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about using your imagination, learning, and having fun. These children shouldn't have to miss out on simply being a kid because they're hungry. To find out how you can help end childhood hunger in your community, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having my mentor and business partner, Joe Weiland, who is the founding partner of Arlington Financial Advisors, here with us today. And Joe, how are you doing?
Doing great. It's a treat to be on the radio. I think I was on your show a couple of years ago. It's been a while.
It has been a while. So let's talk a little bit about you. That's what people want to hear about. So tell us how you got a short story about how you got involved in financial planning.
I was fortuitous. I was living in San Francisco. This is shortly after I graduated from the University of Wisconsin, moved to San Francisco, cast about there for a while. I was working for Citibank. And then I got a job offer from a firm in Santa Barbara. And I moved down to Santa Barbara for that. And it was a firm that specialized in primarily doing financial planning for dentists and physicians. And so I built into my financial planning practice there with an emphasis on practice management as well. And then as you know, Diane, when we set up Arlington, we don't really do practice management and that sort of thing. It's just more personal financial planning. It has been, a number of twists and turns, but a 30-year career that's been entirely enjoyable. And I have to say, we're at that point now where a lot of my early clients, they're 30 years later, I'm taking care of their kids, and I didn't think I would get to that point, but that's kind of happening, which is a treat. Is it?
So this morning, it is, absolutely. And so this morning you sent around to the to our firm a quote from Daniel Kahneman, who is the 2002 Nobel laureate for economic science. When investing, people think in terms of gains and losses. Investing for wealth is not about gains and losses. It's about a broad framework that is needed when thinking about wealth. So how do you use that quote and frame what you do, what we at Arlington do for people?
Well, first of all, I just want to mention that Daniel Kahneman spoke at the Westminster March 6th, which was really what, maybe 6 months ago, 7 months ago. It feels like a lifetime ago. I was in a room with at least 600 other people having breakfast. I don't think you could get 600 people to have breakfast in a room together for another year at least. But what he did, he mentioned this. People think about their invest, you know, then when they think about their financial future, they think, well, geez, if I could get a hot stock or two, if I could just do well with my house or one, you know, they think of it really compartmentalized as far as if they could just do a couple things right, you know, wealth is something that will come to them. And the reality is you need to, and this is the thing that we try and build for our clients. We build a structure, you know, this is where you're going to put X additions every single month. These are the, what you're going to do as far as holding a place to live and how you want to own or do you want to rent it? And why would there be logic between those two choices? And a lot of the bigger things that you need to put in place in order to have the wealth develop over and done right with a structure, it works every time. And that's really what I think we do for our clients is we give them the structure that then they fill in the pieces during the course of their careers. And they enjoy that security that comes from wealth being built. I know, Diane, you and I do this day by day. Do you see it the similar way?
I do. And, you know, on that note, we actually have a caller on the line. We have Linda. Linda, are you with us? Thanks for calling.
I am. Yes, thank you. Hi, my name's Linda, and I have a question for Joe. I was laid off earlier this year because of COVID, and sadly, my savings really took a hit during that time, but I did find part-time work since then. And I have a little bit of money left over after I pay my bills, and I'm wondering whether I should be saving that money and rebuilding my savings or if I should put it into my retirement account. What would you suggest?
Safety first, Linda. You know, I like what you said because COVID. I think isn't that the answer to everything going on these days?
I blame COVID for everything.
So that's how I'm sitting in an office at home. Well, because COVID. anyways, no, it's safety first. And you want to build up an emergency fund where you know that whatever is going to come, whether it's new opportunities or whether it's a new challenge, you're ready for it. That's part of the building blocks that is a structure for having wealth. You want to make sure that... If you have every penny invested at all times, sure, theoretically, what that does, it puts you in a stronger position to grow. But if something unexpected happens and you need to access cash, you might have to sell your investments at an inopportune time. But if you always have a certain amount of reserve of cash, then your investments are allowed to go through whatever cycles they're going to go through in the course of your lifetime. And that cash can be there to get you through the tough spots that inevitably happen. For all of us. So I would say build up that cash supply. Once you have between 3 months and maybe a little bit longer than that, then the time is to start considering, you know, making sure your IRAs are funded or 401k or whatever options that you have. Does that help, Linda?
Absolutely, very much. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Linda. We appreciate it.
Sure.
So Joe, to that point, what are the market issues that your clients are worried about right now? And how have your clients adjusted to this pandemic?
Well, you know, I think the most pressing issue for everybody right now is this election. I don't care if you're on the right or the left, you're definitely afraid of whoever you might, you know, whoever the other team is pitching. And so a lot of people are worried about that. Obviously, we've got a recession that we're midstream in. We've got unemployment that may hamper the recession from ending. The most of our, well, I will say this, our clients, because they have that greater framework, their finances that are invested, they're holding steady with those. They do have their cash set aside, and that cash, should they have a problem with their cash flow, that cash is available for them to get through this near term. But the remaining assets are held steady. Some people are more nervous than others, of course. But for the most part, once we get through this election, I think at least those big questions will be answered.
Go ahead. What do you say to clients that call you, whether it be, you know, deathly afraid of whichever candidate? How does politics play into your conversation?
Interestingly, politics plays into everything in some ways. But when we are investors, we're buying parts of companies, or we're lending money to companies and to other people who are using those funds for different things. And those people are going to do the very best they can, no matter who becomes president. So if you're Apple, or say you're FedEx, or say you're Amazon, it's only interesting who's sitting in the White House. Your job is to go out and produce the product. You can make a profit. And politics are like weather. They have to ignore that situation. So as owners of businesses, we have to ignore the politics, just like the business, the person operating the business does as well.
That reminds me of a former guest, UCSB.
Does that answer your question?
Economics. Yes, and it reminds me of Peter Rupert from UCSB, who said, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners make changes. You give them the rules, they make changes how to maximize their return. And he was speaking in regards to closing down State Street and what that's going to do to the local State Street businesses. And he often says, you know, that's what capitalism is when you allow business, you give the framework and you allow businesses to make the decisions and figure out how to make the money.
You know, all of this is relevant to the capital class. There's 30 million people who are in poverty now, and they don't have the luxury of setting aside money for a rainy day. It's already raining and they have no money. And so, you know, one of the issues about politics today is whether there'll be some type of shift, which could be helpful for the entire country, not just corporations and people who make investments. And investors have to be aware of that, at least in the short run.
Well, and I think that goes back to that article that you were talking about. Yeah. You know, the article that had, you know, when you redeploy the tax savings or tax increase back to what it was in 2017, you know, what is that, 39% on corporations, that money will be deployed and create jobs potentially downstream in terms of the socioeconomic levels.
I have to say that every single thing about this pandemic has been fascinating from an economic standpoint. One of the things that was really fascinating was the $600 per person per week for unemployment benefits as a kicker from the federal government. That's something that, you know, I can't really say I've ever seen a situation where the federal government helped the small individual such a big degree. And if you take into consideration about where that money goes into the economy, it's a dramatic lifeline given, and also potential for something that would be called trickle-up economics. I mean, I always jokingly say, if you put money in the economy, you know, if the federal government, and they've done this, injects $2.4 trillion into the economy, eventually that money is going to land in the hands of corporations. That's their number one job, is to go get the money. So why start with it in the corporate hands? Start it with it in the little guy's hands, and it'll move up there eventually.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Are you ready to start and run your own successful business? Ready to grow your small business or home business? Women's Economic Ventures is a local nonprofit helping women start and build successful businesses. In addition to their highly successful self-employment training program, Weave offers services to help women succeed at every stage of their business, from startup and launch to building and sustaining a business, including individual business counseling, professional networking events, advanced business training, and small business loans to start or expand a business. Over 1,000 local businesses are now owned and operated by women who have taken part in programs and services. Whether you're ready to start up, launch, build, or sustain your business, Women's Economic Ventures is right here to help you make it happen. Call 965-6073 or visit weaveonline.org.
I'm Richard Dugan, your host for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. In this 2020, the year of perfect vision, we're asking you to go within, to spend some time quietly, peacefully, looking for guidance, instruction, and inspiration. We're also asking you to wash up, mask up, and stand back. Wash your hands for 20 seconds, put your mask on when you're outside, and step back 6 feet from people who are near you. Maintain social distancing. Join us Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. right here.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have one of the founding partners and managing partner of Arlington Financial Advisors with us today. So, Joe, what would you say sets Arlington Financial Advisors apart from other firms?
There are things that are distinct about Arlington. Can you hear me okay or no?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay, good. We're working on the hookup here. I'm working from my carport right now. There's two things I think that set us aside, distinct from most of the firms out there. Number one, we're owner operated. In other words, I do financial advising, Diane does financial advising. Anyone that you end up speaking to as an advisor at Arlington is one of the partners that owns part of the firm. And so you have an advisor that's 100% engaged in what you're doing. The other thing is we ask the questions from a, you know, kind of going back to what that quote was from Daniel Kahneman, which is we come from a larger context, building wealth for people, not just investing money for people. Investment answers are easy to get. How do I put that into a context that I know is going to build my long-term wealth for myself and my family? That's unique, and that's where we come from.
So in terms of how have you as a business owner responded in this unusual time during this pandemic? Do you have any tips for any other business owners out there?
Oh, yeah. Make sure you have your computer system in the cloud. That makes it quite a bit easier to be nimble. That's made a big difference for us. You know, the biggest single challenge from a financial standpoint is having a team of people that are in disparate places. So you've got, you know, we have people in the office, we have people in their homes, we've got myself here. Everyone's in a slightly different location, and you can't just walk down the hallway and check and see how people are doing and have that natural feeling of team. So you have to spend extra time, effort, and energy to make sure that the team is together and cohesive. That's our biggest challenge at Arlington. I will say.
You know, I found that Zoom is so powerful that, for example, I had my first medical visit vis-a-vis Zoom. And after the first 10 seconds, it's like being in a doctor's office. I can have business conversations where I feel totally comfortable and forget that I'm on Zoom. And so I think that the reality that you can be in another place is really going to change how business is going to be conducted. And I don't think it's a short term. I think, you know, people will get together, people still want to meet, but, and there is a benefit for being in the same office sometime, but this is not like Skype. This actually makes you feel like you're in the same room.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think that we'll see some of that happening in commercial real estate as companies start to move to a more remote work environment. The need for commercial space will become lessened, or maybe just not as much.
Yeah, and you're seeing that right now in New York real estate. Commercial real estate is really in trouble right now, and you're seeing that sort of being moving out throughout the country. There's a big article today about it in the Wall Street Journal about how there's a fear that commercial real estate throughout the country is going to be under pressure for the next few years.
Yeah, that has not sorted itself out.
Yeah.
And so now, Joe, given the fact that there are so many concerns out there, and normally the market reflects concerns as a downward draft or a downward trend, why is the market rebounding as strongly as it has since the low of the market in March, despite the fact we're in a pandemic? We have civil unrest, we have a recession, we have high unemployment, you know, and the list goes on.
It's fascinating. It's part of one of the things that no one I know would have ever called that we'd have as quick of a recovery as we've seen. I will say that you know, our plan, which is to hold steady through things, because I don't know what the next emergency is going to be, but there's going to be an emergency every bit as big as this one sometime in the next 5, 8, 7 years, maybe next year. I don't know. And so you have to hold steady through these things because the future is hard to predict. Now, that said, when we sit here today and say, what happened? Okay, we have four theories about this, or four hypotheses about why is the market back where it is today. Theory number one kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier, which is, well, first of all, let's talk about any kind of existential threat that happens to any kind of a society. Whether it's a World War II situation, whether it's a pandemic that might end the economy, you're going to have three phases to this situation. Phase number one, you're going to have a basically battle with that existential threat. You know, you're going to shut down whatever you need to. You're going to write any check you need to, whether GM's going to quit building cars and start building tanks, or whether we're going to shut down the entire restaurant and aviation industry. You just do whatever you need to. Then once the battle is done, then you have phase two. And phase two is you measure the size of the hole. And then phase three is the recovery from that hole. Until you know the size of the hole and the rate of the recovery, you actually don't know the value of the economy or the size of the economy. And so it's really hard to say what the proper price is for stocks today, because that's a valuation of that. So if we don't know what they're worth, why are they so strong? Okay. So theory number one, okay, I'm going to go through this kind of quickly, but theory number one is we've had somewhere between a 4 and a 10% shrinkage in our GDP. We have a $22 trillion GDP. That's a $2.2 trillion maximum shrinkage, but it might be as little as $1 trillion. So we have a hole that's between $1 trillion and $2.2 trillion in size. The first big fix the federal government put in place was a $2.45 trillion fix. That's more fill than hole. So there's extra
money. When you
money.
Talk about the fix, is that the CARES money, the stimulus that came, and the $600 per week unemployment booster?
Correct. The PPP, the CARES, the bailout for the airline industry, the $600 per person. you know, you put it all together, it's a $2.4 trillion package. Now, you read in the Wall Street Journal, they throw around a number, $3 trillion, and I've even seen recently, about a week ago, I saw a $4 trillion number. I haven't been able to track down the extra trillion, but if I find it, I'll be happy. Anyways, there's more fill than there is hole. That means there's more money in the economy. What one part of our economy is specifically designed with one purpose and one purpose only, that is going and getting all the extra money it can. Well, that's corporate America. How do you own corporate America? You buy stocks. Hence, theory number one, stocks are up because there's extra money and we want to own the people that are going to get the money. So theory number two is interest rates, as Neil said earlier, the 10-year at 0.7%. Okay, it was 0.5% for a little while. That means you buy a $100,000 bond, a treasury, you put $100,000 in it, and for 10 years, you get somewhere between $500 and $700 a month, or a year, I'm sorry, for 10 years. And you think to yourself, okay, $100,000 gets me $500. I'm going to keep shopping, okay? And eventually, you will get to the point where you will end up shopping the stock market.
Well, we got to take
we have to take a break.
We have to take a break now anyway, and then we'll get our voice back. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Under COVID-19 restrictions, most all public performances, indoor and out, have been banned here in Santa Barbara. An organization has been formed to help get our musicians, singers, and performers of all types working again. It's called the Santa Barbara Live Performance Task Force. Here's Steve Epstein.
The bottom line is we want to restore the arts to our community. Why are we not letting people who sing or play music do that in a controlled, measured, safe, and sane fashion? If we don't keep these people going, when this is over, these people won't be around. Call your city councilman or woman. And even better, call your supervisors. Call County Environmental Health. Let them know that you think that the people involved in this can set up the protocols to do this safely and that that is what you want.
To learn more about the Santa Barbara Live Performance Task Force, contact Steve Epstein. His email is steve@theepsteinpartners.com. That's steve@theepsteinpartners.com.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology. Mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
And so, Joe, before the break, we were talking about the four hypotheses of explaining what's going on in the economy, and I believe you are on hypothesis two. So tell us about the interest rates.
Okay, so interest rates are so low that if you're looking at buying a 10-year treasury, you put $100,000 into it and you get paid $700 a year for 10 years. That's it. That's all you'll ever get out of that. I'm not even gonna go to the complexities of the risk you take with that, but you certainly don't get paid well. So
when you start shopping, when you have that offer, you keep shopping and you're going to end up at the stock market eventually. Theory number three. So theory number one is there's extra money. You want to own stocks that are going to go find that money. Theory number two, the stock market's kind of the only game in town. Theory number three is that there's so much cash available. What the Federal Reserve has done, in addition to lowering interest rates, they have put a lot of liquidity into the system. What does liquidity in the system mean? It basically means that there's more cash in the system. There's $17 trillion in cash today, which is 75% of our GDP is sitting literally in money markets and bank deposits, which is much higher than it's been in years past. In the 90s, this number was less than 50% of our GDP. And it's not that cash raises the price of stocks, but all that cash is earning virtually nothing. And if it perceives a bargain out there, whether it's cheap real estate or whether it's cheap bonds or it's cheap stocks, that cash is going to move and buy it. And so it's like a life preserver of cash. So theory number three is there's a life preserver of cash on assets. Then theory number four, now I went through this with my wife and she's much smarter than I am. And she said to me, it's never one thing. It's always a combination. So it's probably a combination of these four things plus other things that you can think of. Theory number four is never bet against capitalism. It's why we've always bought stocks in the past. And when you own businesses, what you see is businesses are responding. They're trying to figure out how to make the most money they can. If you had one share of the S&P 500 in 1990, it was earning about $20 a share. 2019 earned $160 a share. That's an eightfold increase in 30 years. That's we want to be on that train. It's simple as that. So Diane, does that?
And for anyone listening that wants to read more about it, Joe was actually published in the South Coast Business Times talking about these four hypotheses. I think it was the last issue that has come out. So go ahead, Neil. Sorry, I cut you off.
So somebody would, I know someone that would argue against that. Unfortunately, he's dead. Benjamin Graham from Graham and Dodd. So I'll have to pick up just give you his opinion. Basically, the father of investing basically said that the value of an investment is, the discounted value of its future dividends. And in your discussion, only the fourth one touches on actual value of the earnings in a very obtuse way. Even that fourth one is a little bit suspect because, and I mentioned this briefly before, that there is this pressure today on the non-capital owners wanting their share. And so while it's true that since the end of World War II, capitalism has ruled in its unabashed way, it's possible that with the political backlash we're seeing, there could be a change in what this country is and what capitalism is going to look like. So that plus the fact that in all of your arguments, we don't really see the value of discounted earnings at an appropriate discount rate means that if the market were to crash in the next 6 months, you could make a really good argument why we should have foreseen it.
I think you're absolutely right. You saw through my fourth theorems because when at the end of the day, it didn't address unemployment, the recession, it didn't address pandemics. It didn't talk about a lot of the illnesses that have caused this issue. That's a fact. And the discounted cash flow model, you could get into that and you'd say, well, you get into a 0.7% return on a 10-year treasury that can justify a pretty high price to pay for future cash flows, just in a relative world. But I do like, Graham Dodd, they're considered the granddaddies of investing because they were good, they were smart, and a lot of heavy thought that came from them still fuels a lot of the best thinking on Wall Street, I think, to this day.
And, one of the things, Warren Buffett says this also, and over the last 15 years, a lot of people in various times have called Warren Buffett, an old man that's really lost it. is that never get sucked in by what's happening. And what's happening usually takes longer than you thought to adjust. So, you know, it sometimes takes real great discipline to avoid a stock market that doesn't make sense. And in my early days in the market, someone told me something which I think is the most important advice I ever got, which was never invest in anything you don't understand. And, you know, I'm bearish because I don't understand the stock market right now. And it's not that I have a great reason to think the market's going down. I just don't understand why it's valued as it is. So I'm sticking to my guns. as wrong as I've been for the last 2 years, I'm sticking to my guns.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day, right, Neil?
Exactly.
So you were right most of March staying out of the market.
No, for me, it's only right one of the times because I sleep so much. I only get to see 1 12 o'clock. So it's only a good one time.
Great. So in terms of tell us, Joe, what's going on with the S&P 500 and what do you think, how can you account for the fact that the hospitality industry is showing losses, the airline industry is showing losses, and the S&P 500 is still up despite that?
Okay. Here's a fascinating statistic in the Wall Street Journal this morning. And I know that Neil saw this one. Peloton, which is that bicycle thing where you ride a bicycle and you watch a TV screen and you're competing with people in New York or wherever else you might be. That has a $38 billion market cap, which is greater than Ford Motor Company. So the point of that is it's a tech company, and tech companies have these great big market caps that, is it Apple today was 11% of the market cap, I think is the number that I saw this morning. These things are so much of the S&P 500 right now that they mask a lot of ills that have happened. So when you're buying the S&P 500, you're actually sure you buy a lot of Apple, but you're buying enormous positions in lots of different smaller companies. It's the argument for value investing that one of these days that Warren Buffett's going to be right again, and Graham Dodd will not have to roll over in their grave any longer. And you're going to see a real recovery because those firms are real firms. And it's just not the Pelotons, the Teslas, and the Apples that are going to make money into the future.
Well, the other thing is the Peloton gets great gas mileage. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Are you retired and thinking of traveling outside the United States or maybe even relocating? If you are, Social Security has a special website you should visit first. It's called Social Security Payments Outside the United States. Just answer a few short questions to see if your payments can continue. So if you are retired and plan to travel or relocate outside the United States, please plan on first visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/international/payments.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Joe, this during this pandemic, you know, you've written several articles, and one of them, it was for the Santa Barbara Lawyer magazine, and it was entitled The Gift of Self-Reliance for Your Kids. Tell us about what you said in that article and how people can apply it to their own lives.
Well, that's an interesting concept for in one of the things I it's near and dear to me. We have a lot of our clients are in a position where, you know, over the years they've built up more and more wealth, and now they're in a position they can help their children to whatever they'd like to. So one of the questions is, how much should I help my children? Well, the truth of the matter is you should probably help them as little as you possibly can, because probably your children are in good shape and they'll probably, you know, they'll be stronger if they take care of themselves and they're able to do so. Every time you give something to a child, every time you do something for a child, they lose a little of that ability to do it for themselves. If you help them buy a car, well, they don't know how to buy a car. If you pay for their dinner, they don't necessarily know how to go out and get the money themselves for their dinner. The less you pay for with the child, the more that they become self-reliant. The more they're self-reliant, the more they can stand on their own 2 feet and feel comfortable and confident about who they are. So I always say, when you say, how much should I help with my kids? As little as you have to. And you make a stronger child out of that. And when I say child, it could be a 35-year-old, 40-year-old or older.
There's a lot of empirical evidence to support that. Someone did a study years ago, I forgot the name of it, where they took a look at families like the Rockefellers with real wealth, and they found that the third generation of every one of these families went to seed. In fact, Santa Barbara was supposed to be the place in the turn of the 19th century as the last stop, where the third generation drunken son went to be inventoried because he couldn't function. So there's certainly a lot of evidence to support that. And I'm going to send a copy of this video to my two sons.
I asked the question with you in mind, Neil. Yeah,
thank you.
How do you be a great dad? Help your kids as little as possible. Great dad.
Right.
No, but I think it's important for parents to realize that by allowing your child to have that purpose and that meaning that in their the. It will give them the ability to be proud of themselves. And not that you can't help at all, but to know that for the child to know that they can do it themselves is really powerful for us as humans to know.
Exactly. Well said, Diane. Well said.
Wow. I think we stumped Neil. This might be a first.
I am so taken back by that brilliance that I have to say, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Joe, thank you for being our guest. You were great. Thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you all next week.